A mochi moment from Sadie, who writes, I'm not crying, you're crying. This is what I said during my first appointment with my physician at Mochi, because I didn't have to convince him I needed a GLP-1. He understood, and I felt supported, not judged. I came for the weight loss and stayed for the empathy. Thanks, Sadie. I'm Myra Ahmed, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Sadie is a Mochi member compensated for her story.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Sorry for the long story, but I can't figure out this person's motive. One night I was in bed with my boyfriend. It was about 1:30 a.m. I get a text from a random number saying, is this, and then my name. Sorry for messaging late and out of the blue like this, but I don't think then saying my boyfriend's name is being honest, and I need to talk to you. We exchange a few texts, and basically they're accusing my boyfriend of cheating on the both of us. Obviously, I was annoyed, but bear in mind it was June 2020, bang in the middle of coronavirus lockdown in the UK. We'd spent every day together since March. He denied it all and insisted he didn't know who this person was. The same number starts texting him, angry text, calling him a lying rat, not looking good for a boyfriend. But this is where it gets weird. This person gives no specifics, they won't tell me their name, what my boyfriend has done, only that he is a liar and that I was an idiot for believing him. I'd ask, but they would just reply with vague, angry texts. Their grammar and spelling was good, but they'd use slang words from our local area. We assumed it was just some kid who found our numbers off Facebook and were having a laugh, so we just ignored it. Then nothing, until my boyfriend gets a text the following afternoon, asking him to meet at the local social club for some company. Me and my friend got straight in the car and went down there. No one was there. The club was closed because of COVID, but we couldn't help but feel like we were being watched. It was really weird. A few days go by, and the same number starts texting me again. This time, the text language is weird. It's like spelling mistakes and saying stuff like, why you too instead of you too, that kind of thing. It felt like it was a different person texting me. They seemed a lot angrier at me now, because I didn't believe them straight away. Then they text me, you're so dull. I see him leaving your house earlier, LMAO. Cocky, I said something funny like, where's my house then? And then they replied with my street name. They also know things about us, like the fact that he was in the army, but I guess you can figure that out from social media photos. I called them loads, but it would just ring twice and cut off. I tried switching the number on WhatsApp and on a few social medias. Nothing. Only on Instagram, the number would come up with a location of a film company in Rattle, Netherlands. When I googled the number, its provider is Tizme. I've never heard of it, but it looks like it might be a fake number. Never asked for any money or anything like that. Don't get why someone go through so much effort just to wind us up. The last text I had was, okay, you'll see eventually, LMAO. Creepy. Any advice, please? I moved a lot growing up. By the time freshman year of high school came around, I had moved 7 times or so, and was about a year and a half into my most recent move. I had a pretty close group of friends in middle school, and we all went to high school together. I met him through one of those close friends. We were in band together, and even though he was almost 4 years older than us, we welcomed him into our group. Sam was easily twice my size, tall and heavy set, and originally kind of intimidating, although I was never afraid of large men before him. Lesson learned. I kind of had a bad home life. I spent as much time as I could at school, sometimes hanging around the school campus until 6 or 7 at night with a friend group. 3 of us lived in the same direction, and we would walk the half-hour trip together until our paths split. One slightly colder evening, Sam offered to walk me home since the others had already gone home. I just thought he was being a gentleman. He mentioned something from a previous move when he lived in California. he didn't walk a friend home and something horrible happened. He left it at that. And I let him walk me home. We got a lot closer after that. We bonded over living in California and exchanged numbers. He would message me late into the night about his depression and self-harm, and I wanted to help. A few months later, he tried asking me out. It was this big romantic gesture. He learned a Disney song, and the ukulele and sang it to me in the cafeteria. But I was already dating someone, and when I turned him down, he got angry. A freaky, quiet, twitchy kind of angry. I felt so bad. I started seeing him everywhere. We were still friends, we still hang out in groups, but I would pass him on the street, walking somewhere, and a few minutes later, I'd see that he changed direction and had started to follow me. He would walk me to classes by following me in the passing period at a distance. I started to minimize the group time we spent together, and he would follow me more. I had friends meet me at each class and walk me to my next one because I felt unsafe. He knew where I lived. Then he started to talk, not to me, but to mutual friends about one girl in California who he tried to walk home. At first, she just shared my name, some crazy coincidence. Then she had the same brown curly hair and blue eyes, and every time he rambled about her, she became more and more like me. And then he said what happened. Over literal weeks, this fantasy evolved. They were walking home, and they were jumped by some guy with a knife. It was a robbery gone wrong on her birthday, January 24th, my birthday, and she died horribly and couldn't react in time. She bled out on his arms. Sarah, who had brown curly hair, blue eyes, and my name, my birthday, and sounds just like me, bled out on his arms. Each retelling added more and more detail, and the guy with his sick fantasy about my death would follow me around and knew where I lived. My boyfriend was abusive, mentally and physically, but I stayed as close to him when I could, whenever I could, because if the worst happened, I knew for sure he could throw a punch. I never felt safe at school or in our little town, walking from home or walking from home in the dark. One day, at school, he had a breakdown, freaked out and ran out of the school in a panic. I was sent after him and found him curled up on the floor. I got closer. I knew about his anxiety and depression, and my safety aside, I wanted to make sure he was okay. It was then that he told me about this horrifying story that I'd been hearing from mutual friends with added details. We had been walking home from a concert in California. We passed a dark alley and a homeless man came out with a rusty knife and asked for anything valuable. I fumbled for my phone. I didn't have anything else on me. And he thought I was calling the cops. He stabbed me. Once, twice and again, Sam stood there, horrified. He saw red and grabbed a broken glass bottle near my body and attacked some homeless man. He killed him with his own knife. He told me he killed someone. My stalker had killed someone. It didn't matter how messed up he was anymore. I didn't care if it was fantasy or real. I didn't care how it would affect his mental health anymore. I wanted to go to the police. I was scared for my life. My friends convinced me to go to the school counselor first. That morning, we went and told him everything. The stalking, the stories. How he admitted to murder and that he was the reason they moved from California. How I was afraid for my life and wanted to call the police. My counsellor didn't take us seriously. She went to the principal, and the principal, not mental health expert, called Sam in to talk about the accusations. The principal then informed me that he didn't think that Sam had any kind of mental illness and that I wasn't in any danger. And that was that. I lost faith in adults, gave up on going to the police. Stayed with my friends walking me between classes, hiding behind my abusive boyfriend, and looking behind me every step of my walk home that year. The counsellors ended up gaslighting us to the point where it feels like a fever dream now. And I would think it's made up if it weren't for my journal entries recording the events and my growing panic, and the similar stories from my friend group. Just for some clarification, I don't think anyone actually died in California. I think he's a pathological liar, and that he was so deep in a fantasy that he convinced himself it was real. No, I wasn't physically hurt, but it was emotionally scarring, and the threat that he posed to me was 100% real. Hello, I'm French, so I apologise in advance if I make any mistakes. As I said, I live in France. And this story happened to me this summer, just after the lockdown ended. I was, and am still, 19. After this lockdown ended, I went to my grandparents to spend a few weeks. I got tested before, and no problem there. My grandparents live in a small city in the north of France, and they have a dog who's quite big. When I was really young, I lived at my grandparents for a year, and at the time, the dog was only a puppy. Her name was Chippy, in French, which kind of means little devil in English, but in an affectionate way. Considering when I was living there, I played with her a lot, we were both really close, and this will have its importance later. Two of my hobbies are having long walks and running, thus every evening I was going out for a long walk with the dog. There's a track that follows a path through the forest, then there's a small hill, and on top of that, a big place with lots of fields. I run there a lot and I know the place. The air's fresh and the view's quite beautiful. So I was going there with the dog every day. It was also helping my grandparents to have her doing lots of exercise. The first time we went there, nothing special happened. We just enjoyed our walk. It's about 6 or 7 kilometers, so basically an hour walk. The next day, when we arrived on top of the hill, in a field, it was probably around 10 p.m, but there was some light because it's summer. There were 3 other people walking in the field. They were younger than me, probably 15 or 16. I also noticed they were smoking, so my guess is that they used to come here so they couldn't be seen by their parents. We went past them, and I greeted them, and they greeted back. Once again, nothing special there. For a whole week, I did this walk around the same time, 10 p.m, and passed those 3 guys with nothing special happening, and it was perfectly fine to me this way. My second week, as I usually went for a walk with the dog Chippy, and arrived at the fields, there was only one of the 3 boys. He wasn't smoking this time though. When he saw me, I was at the entrance of this field just after the little hill climb, so the entrance of the forest was just behind me. He did a sign with his hand to catch my attention and asked if I had a lighter, which I actually had in my pocket. I told him, yeah, sure. So he walked to me, hands in the pockets of his hoodie. When he came near me, for some reason I felt a shiver. It's crazy how sometimes your instincts know there's a problem, but you don't listen to it because nothing looks weird to you. I handed over the lighter when he passed by. At that moment, my dog was staring at him. Then everything happened really fast. He did a really fast movement with his hand, coming from the hoodie, and I only saw something shining. I just had a reflex of throwing myself back, so hard that I fell down actually. And I then realised it was a knife that he was holding and he tried to stab me. What saved me is my dog, God bless her. When she saw the guard trying to stab me, she jumped up on him and he fell down. As I said before, he's a really big dog. I immediately got up on my feet and heard something from behind me, from the entrance of the forest. I saw 2 guys wearing animal masks running to me. They were probably the 2 friends. In this kind of situation, your brain just acts for itself. You don't really think at all. It's just a case of the answer was found and it was really simple. The other guy was still on the ground. I just watched my dog and told her, run. I started running and she followed me. But I heard the worst possible thing from the guy who got up. We'll catch him. Don't let him go. At this moment, I was totally terrified. I was just running and running, and I was hearing them running behind me. I was only thinking, how long are they going to follow me and who the hell are they? And this was the time I was really happy to be a runner. I was clearly better than those guys, and that totally saved me, because they chased me for something that felt like an eternity to me. Fortunately, at the end of the field, there's another entrance to the forest, and this time it's a descent to the end of the road. I heard the steps of 3 guys vanishing as I arrived at the end of the forest. Though, I didn't stop running until I arrived at my grandparents' house and locked myself in. I caught a massive breath and gave her a huge hug. I saw in her eyes that she totally understood what happened, and I've never been so happy to have her in my life. After that, I told everything to my grandparents, and we called the police, but they didn't find anyone. I really don't know what these guys wanted, but the animal masks made it seem like it was some kind of satanic ritual. I really don't want to know anyway. I still do long walks with Chippy, the hero dog, but I now go earlier, into places with a little more people. I hope you enjoyed my story. Again, I apologise if it is a bit all over the place. I'm French, my English isn't great. And to the 3 guys in the forest, let's never meet again. Hey folks, I'm kind of new, and this is my first story I've submitted here, so let's get started. I must clarify, this didn't happen to only me, but my uncle too. This was after a Christmas Eve party, and when everyone went home. I decided to stay because my cousin and I were watching a movie. My uncle, who used to walk his dogs in the woods next to a park, went off to take them out. Before this, my aunt told him not to do that because it was too dark out there. It was around 4 or 5 a.m. He didn't care much, and he went off anyway. My aunt was still worried, so I went along with him. Everything was quiet. My uncle and his dogs were having a relaxing walk as usual, and I wasn't really paying attention to the surroundings, when suddenly, the dogs went still. This wasn't that strange. They always stopped in their way to stare or bark at other animals, like rats or birds or insects or other dogs. However, this time it was different. When the dogs went still, my uncle and I noticed something was going wrong. The dogs weren't angry or curious. They were kind of nervous, anxious, and afraid. One of the dogs, the largest one, was growling and shaking. As my uncle started to get worried about the situation, we heard it. People in the woods. We didn't see how many because of the darkness. They were saying something.
"We all gather here by the blood of..."
Then we couldn't understand.
"We..."
Then we couldn't understand again.
"Thee and thy..."
And then we couldn't understand again. As my uncle and I heard that, he yelled for his dogs to follow him out of the woods. As we all left, he turned his head back and he only saw the slight movement of the branches and shrubs. Perhaps because these people were trying to hide. After all that happened, he hasn't walked his dogs near those woods, nor will he do it again when it's dark. So to the strangers in the woods, let's never meet again. I currently go to a large university in Philadelphia, and my school isn't in the greatest part of the city. I'm a senior now, and I've learned to just sort of keep my head down, and most people in my area will just leave me alone. The one exception that I've had to this was my freshman year. My roommate freshman year was an absolute madwoman, stealing my stuff, threatening to physically assault me, and spreading rumours about me. I generally tried to stay out of my room for the most part, just to avoid any interaction with her, until I was able to get a new roommate the next semester. As a result, I spent a lot of my time at the library or at friends' places. A few weeks into my first semester, I think it was around early October, I was hanging out at a friend's place. He lived on the other side of campus, probably a 15-minute walk from my dorm room, but my path from my room to his dorm never left campus. I'd been warned prior to moving into my dorm room that campus was the safest place for students because the locals generally stayed off campus unless they were grabbing food from a food truck. Keeping that in mind, I really didn't mind walking back from my friend's dorm really late at night since the path was well lit and the only people I saw there were students. Regardless, it was getting late and it was a weeknight, so I told my friend I was going to head out. He offered to walk me home, but I declined and I'd be fine, which was my first mistake. The walk back was perfectly fine, up until I got to the block that my dorm building was on. For context, there was another empty dorm building on the block that I lived on. It was scheduled to be torn down later that year because there was black mold everywhere inside. But at the time, it was still standing, and were absolutely no lights outside of it. There was a courtyard beyond the building, which I used as a shortcut, which was my second mistake. As I entered the courtyard, I used my phone as a flashlight to kind of guide my way through the space. As I was nearing the other end of it, I heard someone call out, "Miss!" Obviously, my first thought was, nope, and just kept walking and pretending I didn't hear anything and picked up my pace. But the voice called again, "Wait, miss!" At this point, I was nearly out of my courtyard, and there was some light coming from the windows of my dorm building, so I could kind of see what was going on without completely relying on my flashlight. I turned around to see who had been calling me out there, which was my third mistake, and I met with the man. He looked so ordinary, except for his oddly wide smile and the fact that he was carrying a rather heavy-looking trash bag. "Hey, miss, I have something for you." Nah, I'm okay. I need to be getting home." "No, I think you need this. Let me show you." He opened the trash bag and reached his hand in. I didn't know what to expect, so I bolted. I ran further from the courtyard and towards the ramp that led up to my building, thinking I could outrun him. But I was sorely mistaken. Despite the fact that there was about 10 or 15 feet between us, as soon as I turned, his hand was around my wrist. "Miss, I have something for you. I really think you need it." Feeling trapped and unsure of what to do, I sighed, defeated. I hoped to God that someone would look out their window and see what was going on, or someone else would be walking back to the building at a late hour and see us. I wanted to scream, but I was scared that if I drew attention to us that he would do something that would make me really regret trying to get help. Again, not the greatest part of city. He smiled at me, like he knew I wasn't going to try and call out, and he let go of my wrist. I didn't realise how tightly he was gripping me until he released it. He took a step back from me and reached into the trash bag again. My heart was pounding and I wasn't sure what to expect, but it definitely wasn't what he pulled out of the bag. It was a clock. An old digital alarm clock. The thing had to be at least 20 years old and it was encrusted with dirt, like he pulled it out of the junkyard. I was stunned at the sight of the yellow and orange plastic. After I realised that he was actually trying to give me the clock, I thought it might have been a bomb. Here, this is just for you. Oh, I really don't need one. I've got a clock in my room. I gestured towards a massive building behind me. This one's different. What the hell? What's that supposed to mean? Miss, see this one has a radio. Pretty unique, don't you think? I bet yours doesn't have a radio function. He smiled. I mean, mine didn't, but don't most alarm clocks have radios built into them? I took a step back from him, but as I stepped back, he stepped closer, mirroring my movements. He reached out, presenting the clock to me. I took another step back. He took another one forward. I knew my back was literally going to be against the wall of the dorm if I took another step back, and I wasn't sure where to go. I felt like I had no choice but to go against everything my body was telling me to do and just accept the clock. I reached out and noticed that where he grabbed my arm was already bruising. With my hand now outstretched, he placed the clock into my hand. I felt so dirty having it in my hand. I don't know how to describe it, but it just instantly felt like I had just finished rolling around in dirt. My arm felt like it was throbbing with the clock, and it was so heavy. It felt like it was getting heavier with every passing second. I knew it just felt like that because I was freaking out, but it didn't make this experience any less terrifying. I didn't know what to do. The guy was still smiling at me. I just blurted out, "Thanks," span around, gripping the clock. I took a step away from him towards a ramp leading up to the building, and he took a step back. I decided that was my chance to bolt for the door. I spun around on my heels and took another few steps before hearing, "You're so beautiful, I love you," called out behind me. I turned back and the man was out of sight. I screamed. I didn't know what I'd just got myself into, but I didn't want any part of it. I sprinted towards the door to the building, dumping the clock in the trash. I still thought that there was a decent chance that it was a bomb, and if it was going to explode, I wanted to do something to contain it. Nothing came of the man, or the clock, other than the bruise on my arm. It healed within a few days, and soon after, I'd forgotten about the incident. I think I just repressed the memory, and didn't want to unpack what I went through. I still try to not think about it, and the only reason I'm writing this now is because one of my current, non-crazy roommates had brought it up a few days ago, and the floodgates of my brain opened, and I felt like I needed to share what happened.
A mochi moment from Tara, who writes, "For years, all my doctor said was eat less and move more, which never worked. But you know what does? The simple eating tips from my nutritionist at Mochi. And after losing over 30 pounds, I can say you're not just another GLP-1 source. You're a life source. Thanks, Tara. I'm Myra Amit, founder of Mochi Health. To find your mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Tara is a Mochi member compensated for her story.
I just want to say, when all this happened, I was 18, and I was young, innocent, and naive. Now that I'm in my mid-20s, I would never have let this happen. It was my freshman year at college, and as one could imagine, I was excited to be on my own for once in my life. So excited to be on my own, I decided I was going to take summer classes on campus. That way, I wouldn't have to worry about coming in when the big crowd of freshmen came, and I would already know where everything was. Plus, it meant I could get away from my parents faster. But mainly, all I could think about was boys. You see, I had never dated anyone through high school, so I thought I'd find my one true love at college. Because, of course, that's what all the movies told me. About 2 weeks go by, and me and one of my roommates, of which I had four, were hanging out in the lounge area, showing off pictures from our Instagrams of our families and friends. Well, my roommate, we'll call her Tracy, showed me a picture of her and these two guys. One of the guys was Tracy's boyfriend, and the other was Tracy's boyfriend's best friend. I'll call him Sean. Now, Sean was very attractive, and I told Tracy that he was hot, and she told me that he went to the tech college near us and he was single. Now, a day or two goes by after this, and she tells me she told Sean that I was interested in him, and he wanted to know if he could follow me on Instagram so he could DM me. And at the time, I trusted Tracy because she seemed like a cool, chill girl, so I excitedly told her yes. I wish I'd never told her that. I talked to Sean for about a week before I was comfortable enough to give him my phone number. At first he seemed super sweet. He would always send me a text message in the morning, telling me to have a good class and that he couldn't wait to meet me face to face. And we would FaceTime every night. At first I loved it because I never had a boy give me so much attention. And like I said before, I never dated anyone, so I was just over the moon that he was even interested enough to talk to me. But it started to get annoying. He would text me almost every second of the day and try and FaceTime me at least 4 times. When I wouldn't respond to him, he would ask if I was okay, while I wasn't answering him, if I was seeing another guy. If I was seeing another guy, it would make him really mad if I was. I, of course, once seeing the messages, would try and reassure him it was okay and I wasn't seeing anyone. Like I said in the beginning, I was young and naive, so I didn't see the red flags. Things started going downhill, and then they kept going downhill. It came to a point where he started asking for pictures of me, either just selfies or pictures of me in the mirror. I wouldn't send them though, because I wasn't comfortable, and he would brush it off saying that it was fine, and I could send him pictures of myself to him whenever I was ready. One time I was in class for a long time because it was lab, and it started at 7 p.m. and wouldn't end until 10 p.m. that night. For those of you who don't know labs in college, they can last from 2 to 4 hours, and mine just happens to be 3 hours that night. Once class ended, I headed up to my dorm and took out my phone. I clicked the button on the slide lighting on the screen. I had 380 unread texts, 10 missed calls, and 3 voicemails from Sean. Before I could even react or even read all the messages on my phone, it started to ring. Instead of being Sean, it was my dad. He had called me to make sure I was alright because he got an alert from the phone company that I'd gotten all those messages. I was still on the phone plan. I don't know why, but I lied to him and laughed it off, saying I was just in a group chat with a bunch of girls from school. Once I got off the phone with my dad, I quickly went to look at the messages I'd gotten. Most of them were demanding why I wasn't answering him, and he would come fire me if I didn't answer him. The voicemails were crude, and most of him saying that he was going to fire me, and when he did, he was going to punish me for not answering him. After this, I just completely blocked him on everything, completely freaked out from the whole thing. About a week goes by, and I start to slowly forget about the incident, try not to think much of it. At least that's what I was trying to do. That whole week, I felt like someone was watching me, but I brushed it off as just being paranoid. At the end of the week, my roommate Tracy, who I'd been avoiding, comes up to me, shouting at me, saying how I broke Sean's heart, and how he had called her, crying, saying that he can't understand why I stopped talking to him. I couldn't even get a word in because of how fast she was talking. She finally called me a self-centered bitch and walked away. I went to class right after that, not realising I'd forgotten to lock my dorm room. You see, I lived with 4 girls and each girl had their own room which would lock from the outside with a key. Well, when I came back from class, I noticed my door was cracked open slightly. My heart dropped into my stomach. I hesitated going in. My hands were shaking terribly. But I finally got the nerve to push it open. Nothing. There was nothing out of place, it seemed. Even though there was nothing out of place, I could have sworn I closed the door before leaving the class. No, I don't remember if I locked it or not. I know for sure that I closed the door. So I asked my roommates, including Tracy, if anyone had gone into my room today, and they all denied it, even Tracy. But I knew in my heart that someone had been there. I tried to brush it off, but I couldn't. So one weekend, when I knew that all my roommates were going to be out of town, I switched dorm buildings and roomed with a girl that I'd gone to be close friends with. After I moved in there, I told her all that happened, and she said that she would walk with me to my classes, which thankfully we had most of our classes together except for the night lab I had, and she would walk with me to my lab and wait until my lab was done to walk me back to the dorm. One night though, she had gone out of town to see her parents or something. I was walking back from my lab, and it had gone really, really late that night again. I heard someone walking behind me, but I didn't pay any kind to it, since class would just let out. but as I was walking, I could hear the steps getting closer, so I started to pick up my walking speed. At this point, I could tell someone was following me, and I was afraid to look back. As the footsteps increased and got faster, I started running as fast as I could. Now let me tell you, I'm not athletic by any means. Somehow though, adrenaline probably, I was able to sprint to my dorm building, hearing someone still running behind me. And I thankfully already had my key out to get into the building, and I swiped on the door and slammed it behind me. Looking up from the slammed door, I see someone who's probably about 10 feet away from the door, staring at me. Even though the person's hoodie was up, and I couldn't see their face, I could just tell they were looking at me, and I just knew it was Sean. Not wasting any time, I go up to the RA that was up that night, bawling, telling him what had just happened. He called the police, and I told them what happened. But basically, they said they couldn't do anything since I didn't see his face, and even though I thought it was Sean, and maybe I was just paranoid since it was nighttime and I was just walking by myself. After all this, I called my friend and told her what happened, and she never went out of town again if I had any late classes. Eventually, I decided college wasn't for me and I dropped out. I moved back to my home state and went to cosmetology school and became a hairdresser. I still haven't dated anyone yet though. Maybe it's the fear of something like that happening again, I'll never know. I do know that I'm super careful with who I talk to now and who I give my social media and phone number to. I'm still scared to go to places by myself though, even though it's been years and I'm states away. Even so, Sean, let's never meet again. I live in a small town in South Africa. Near my town, there's this large patch of woods, and since the outbreak of coronavirus, I haven't been in the woods for a long time, until yesterday. So my friend called me to ask if I wanted to join him and a few other mates to play a game of paintball in the woods, and obviously I was keen. I got my paintball gear and gun, and headed off into my mate's place. There were six of us, Chase, Liam, Matt, Stephen, and obviously me, and also Joey. We headed off into the woods, but made a few stops to fill up on petrol and get some gas for the paintball guns. When we finally got to the woods, we parked the cars, got in our gear, and ventured into the forest to find the perfect spot to paintball. Eventually, we got deep enough into the area with sufficient cover and space to play a good game of capture the flag. We played a couple of games since it was winter. It got dark really quickly. But we planned for this, and brought our flashlights, and decided to play a couple of night games, which is extremely hard, especially in the forest we were in. During one match, Joey and I decided to sit out because we were both tired and needed a quick breather, and the others continued to play from a significantly good distance away. While we were chilling, I was rolling up a joint, here on my pothead, and Joey went to go take a piss a couple of meters away from me. While I was busy rolling, I had the flashlight pointing towards myself since there was no other light to allow me to see what I was doing and what was around me. It was completely dark. I couldn't even see 2 meters ahead of myself because how dark it was. Suddenly, I heard footsteps coming my way, but I thought it was just Joey, and I soon realized I couldn't see any light from his flashlight, so now I was more vigilant, but still relaxed, thinking he's trying to play a prank on me or something. But the footsteps stopped a few meters away from me, so I lifted up my flashlight and pointed it in the direction of where I heard the footsteps and scanned the area. But just saw bushes and trees, and thought it might be Joey hiding in the bushes, or behind a tree, waiting to give me a jump scare. Then I heard footsteps coming in the opposite direction, and when I looked, I could see it was Joey because he was holding a flashlight. That's when I stopped what I was doing, and picked up my flashlight and paintball gun, and when Joey reached me, I whispered, "Bro, there's someone over there." And Joey obviously didn't believe me, and just said to me to stop being a baby. But he soon regretted saying that, because I decided to do one last scan of where I heard the footsteps. And to my horror, I saw someone peeking and staring straight at me from behind a tree, probably 10 or 11 meters away from us. I just shouted, "What the actual hell?" And when Joey heard me say this, he looked at me, and then when the man looked, and instantly jumped up, picking up his paintball gun also. We stared at each other for at least 2 minutes, but it felt like forever until he stepped out from behind the tree. He was a large man, at least 6 foot, was honestly filthy like he hadn't had a bath in years. He was wearing baggy ripped up jeans and an old dirty zip up bomber jacket. Plus, we could see that he was on something, or he was just batshit crazy and he was holding something behind his back. He finally said, "What are you guys doing out here since it's so dark?" We couldn't even answer him because of the shock we were in. Joey started with fear in his voice. "We're just leaving." But the man nodded his head in disagreement and said, "No, you're not. Your friends are still playing the game." I felt a shiver down my spine. "How about we play a little game of our own while we wait for your friends?" And this is when he finally showed us what he was hiding behind his back. It was a large machete. That's when I knew we had to get out of there. So I aimed my paintball gun at him in the toughest way I could muster up. I told him, "Leave now or I'll shoot." Even though I only had about 6 or 7 paintballs loaded, and Joey did the exact same thing but aimed his gun at the man, even though he had no paintballs in his gun. But he didn't even flinch, but did something that honestly made my skin crawl. He just smiled and said, "The game starts now." And suddenly, he just rushed us. So I told Joey to run while I fired my last bullets at him. And luckily, I shot him in his head, which caused him to fall. So that was our chance to book it, and I linked up with our friends. As soon as we started running, we heard footsteps again, and he was actually gaining on us. We could barely see, but we couldn't slow down because we knew what would happen if we did. So we just carried on sprinting with all of our hearts until we heard other paintball guns being fired, so we knew we were close. Joey started shouting to get everyone's attention all of a sudden. I heard a huge thud. Joey tripped and twisted his ankle. I turned around to help him, and when I did, I could see the man running full sprint towards us. In that moment, I thought it was going to be the end of us. But our friends heard our screams for help and rushed to us, and when they saw the man, they just started firing at him, and he knew he wasn't going to be able to take all of us on, so he just decided to turn around and disappear into the forest. We helped Joey up, rushed to get all of our stuff, and rushed to the cars. When we got to my friend's place, we helped Joey treat his ankle, and I proceeded to tell my friends everything that happened, and they were all creeped out. It's safe to say that the next time I'm in those woods, I'm going to have to be a lot more vigilant.
A mochi moment from Tara, who writes, "For years, all my doctor said was eat less and move more, which never worked. But you know what does? The simple eating tips from my nutritionist at Mochi. And after losing over 30 pounds, I can say you're not just another GLP-1 source. You're a life source. Thanks, Tara. I'm Myra Ahmed, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Tara is a Mochi member compensated for her story.
So, this happened a year ago, and I'm still pretty shaken by this whole event. I thought I'd tell my story. I live in the UK and it's autumn, and it gets dark around 4 p.m. There was a school autumn break that week, so all the kids are at home, so that means my girlfriend's brother was home too. I'd been with her a year at this point, so her family knew me pretty well, and her brother enjoyed my company. She'd recently been pretty stressed out. Her parents were going across country for the day, so she had to look after her brother, but I thought that I'd give the day to herself so she can just cool off. I asked her parents if I could look after their son for the day instead, and they agreed. So I came around 8 a.m, and they let me in before they set off. My girlfriend's brother woke up about an hour later, and she followed shortly afterwards. We went out for breakfast at a local cafe together, and went back to her house when we were done. And once I dropped her off, I took her brother to the park. We got there at about 2 p.m, and the place was pretty packed. Eventually, the sun started going down, and the place was completely empty by 4 p.m. I texted my girlfriend and told her we'd be home in a bit, and she said okay. I'm going to be honest, I completely lost track of time. Me and her brother were having fun, being the only two in the park. Me and her brother were stood up on this really tall climbing frame with a slide on it. It was almost pitch black at this point, so I was using my phone as a flashlight. A notification popped up on my screen, and it was my girlfriend asking where we were. I responded, "Oops, coming home now," and told her brother we had to go. He sighed and asked if we can go down the slide, so I said yes. Before I went down, I knew what the park looked like. There were streetlights all around it, benches everywhere, some trees, and places for kids to play. When I came out the slide, there was something weird. A man had appeared out of nowhere and stood beneath one of the street lights. He had a trench coat on and a beanie hat. I immediately got my girlfriend's brother behind me and called out to the man with a friendly, "Hi there." I got a response. He started groaning. I noticed that he was swaying back and forth in the light, and he had his mouth open, drooling with a blank look in his eyes. This made me feel really uneasy. I picked the little bro up and kept checking on this guy the entire time. There was an exit to the left that led to a path back home, so I left out that way and kept checking behind me every few seconds. The guy was still stood there. The path where the guy was stood merges with a big main path if you walk out through some bushes, and so does one I walked through. I was walking down the path for about 2 minutes, periodically checking behind me, and thought I was in the clear. I wasn't. I was on a straight stretch of path with lots of streetlights when I saw him again. He was stood beneath one, looking up at it, and he was playing with something in his hands. I looked a little closer, and I realised it was a knife. I kept walking and walking, checking behind me constantly. My girlfriend's little brother was so scared, he had his head tucked into my chest. I noticed that the guy seemed to be moving into the streetlights whenever I turned around. Initially, I thought my eyes were playing tricks on me, but then I started counting them and realised the two streetlights behind him had definitely turned into five. I could faintly hear the groaning noise, and he was occasionally moaning as well. I picked up the pace and turned the corner, getting closer to the last stretch of street before I got to my girlfriend's house. That was when I heard him behind the rows of bushes. That moaning noise really sounded angry now, and I heard heavy footsteps bounding down the path. The man was absolutely running. I had immediately broke into a sprint and didn't stop until I turned an alleyway at the front of the street and got behind my girlfriend's house. There was a big bush there, so I crouched down behind it and spammed her phone with messages to open the back gate. I hugged her brother close until she opened it for us and got us in quickly. It felt like years. I went to the front of the house and it confirmed that I'd managed to shake him. He was now in the street, circling where I'd been, outside the alleyway just moments ago. He was still moaning. He had that knife in his hand still. He started kicking people's bins over. I called the police immediately, but he was gone by the time they arrived, and as far as I know, they never found him. There was a similar incident near the area a few months ago I saw on Facebook, but I don't think anything came of that either. Her parents thanked me for keeping their son safe and didn't hold any ill will against me for the situation. He went back to normal pretty much the day afterwards, but he still had nightmares about the event. When my country isn't in lockdown, I'm allowed to look after him with my girlfriend, funnily enough. But we haven't been to that park ever since, and I still check over my shoulder and break into a cold sweat every time I'm alone in the street. So, I've recently discovered this page and thought I'd share my story here. I'm not sure if this belongs here, but I don't know if it would fit anywhere else. So, I lived in a pretty nice area with my husband and some family friends. We lived there for a few years with nothing bad happening around us. It felt like a very safe neighbourhood. Now for context, I'm a very short white female and considered disabled even though I look fine, but I could never really beat anyone up since my disability has limited my activity severely. Anyway, onto the story. This happened about a year before we moved, and I had some stories pop up on Facebook of some traffickers that were targeting women and children at the local store that we live right behind. I was freaked out, and so I made it a point not to go to the store without my husband. I still got the news articles about people being followed and grabbed and kidnapped from the store, but I felt pretty safe as long as I didn't go anywhere without my husband. I was going to work one day. I worked about 15 minutes away from my house. It was a call centre kind of out in the middle of nowhere. There were fields every which way. I worked the afternoon shift and was one of the last people to leave at night. I had to stop and get gas and was a little freaked out because I was scared to go anywhere without my husband, but I wasn't going to make it to work and back home, so I had no choice. I stopped at the station and was slightly relieved that it was super busy. I got out and pumped my gas when this big van pulled up in the spot next to mine. A guy got out and started pumping his own gas, then he walked around the pump and got in between my car and me. He smiled and said, "Wow, your car's so clean. How'd you get it so clean?" I was flabbergasted at the question. My car was a mess. It was dirty with bugs and stuff on it. "Why don't you show me how you get so clean?" He reached out to touch me, but I jerked back. Another car pulled up behind me and the guy got out. I think he freaked the guy out because he walked back to his van. I quickly finished pumping my gas and got into my car, locked the doors and sped away. A few minutes later, I look out my window and the van is behind me, right in my bumper pretty much. I could see the guy smiling and laughing with some other guy. I was pretty freaked out, but figured he was going to the freeway. We passed the freeway, but he kept following me. Now I was really freaked out. The only place on the road now is my work. I called my husband, but he didn't answer since he was at work. I was freaking out, so I just picked up the speed and continued to work. I kept looking back, and the van was still there, but just a little bit further back. I made it to work. It was a large building with lots of cars in the parking lot. I parked right at the front of the doors, in a handicapped spot, and ran into the doors. I looked back through the doors, and I saw the guy stopped in front, looking pissed. I ran up to my department, and went right up to a friend who was an ex-military guy. He carried a couple of guns on him at all times. I cried as I told him what happened. I got to work, and was still freaked out all day. We closed, and I was walking down to my car. I peeked out the windows, and that's when I saw the white van. I couldn't see anyone in there, and I wasn't even sure if it was the same van. I ran back to my department and told my friend what was going on. He pulled out his gun and walked me outside. The van had now moved right behind my car. My friend walked me to his car, and we got in, and he drove me right up to my car. Then he followed me all the way home and sat outside until I was inside the house. I could see the van following us, but once we got past the freeway, he turned onto it. The next afternoon on my way to work, I passed a gas station and the van pulled out. Again, they followed me to work, but then turned away once I got to the parking lot. This went on for about a week. They would follow me to work, leave, then be outside when I was leaving, and my friend would walk me out. My buddy told me that they were probably trying to learn my schedule so they could figure out a time to jump me. He insisted that I take one of his guns, just in case he wasn't there at work to walk me out. I didn't want it though, as I was afraid that if I had it, then I'd get pulled over for something and get in trouble for having a gun not in my name and not having a permit for it. I was telling my husband that evening and how his van was still following me, and he suggested that I should call the cops and let them know. I honestly don't know why I didn't think of that. So the next morning, when I was about to get ready for work, I called. I told them everything. Then I left for work. Just like clockwork, the van pulled out of the gas station and started following me. We were on the long stretch of road that nothing was on when I spotted a car parked off to the side of the road. I passed, and then the car passed, and then the lights came on. The van was pulled over. I later found out that the men following me had several warrants for rape and attempted kidnapping. The back of the van had knives, ropes, gloves, masks, chloroform, and some other sketchy crap in it. The cops believed that I was going to be their next target. When I got to work, my friend wasn't there. He was sick. I'm so glad that I called the cops that morning, because I don't think I would have made it home if he wasn't there to walk me out. Anyway, that's my creepy story. I hope you guys liked it. It's 100% true. We have since moved out, and I live in a not as nice area, but so far, I haven't noticed any creepy people around. But I always carry pepper spray whenever I go out. When I was 13, I broke my leg in a nasty bicycle accident. I ended up in a plaster cast from my hip to my ankle for 8 weeks. As it was coming up to Christmas, my younger brother wanted to go to the theatre to see the Christmas show. I was 13, moody and accompanied with a bright pink cast everywhere I went. I was not feeling it. My dad, never one for going to the theatre, offered to take me to Pizza Hut instead. It was a rare opportunity to spend time with my dad, who had often been working very long hours. He was a police officer, which at the time, I didn't really take an interest in what he did. We had a great evening, and we came back to the car with full bellies and some leftover pizza. I remember babbling away to my dad, as I had been the whole night, enthralled to have my dad's undivided attention. After a while, I noticed he wasn't really responding anymore. We were fairly near home, but still on the main roads before we turned off to our housing estate. At first, I thought he'd just lost interest, but I glanced across and noticed that he was permanently looking in the rearview mirror. I asked what was up, and he said, "That car behind us has been following us all the way from Pizza Hut." I glanced behind and commented that we were still on the main roads, and I couldn't see that this was an unusual route for this guy to take. He said I need to see wherever he is. I don't want to lead this guy to our house. I rolled my eyes. My dad was always paranoid about this kind of stuff. We wouldn't even tell our friends we'd gone on holiday because he was convinced the house would get broken into whilst he was away. We were coming up to a residential area before ours that I knew from doing a newspaper round. I suggested the street coming up on the left, as it loops around in a horseshoe shape through an estate and brings you back out to the same main road we was on, just further up. Nobody would take this road to come out onto the main road again. My dad turned off, and so did the car. I will never forget that feeling, that sinking feeling as I watched the car sharply turn behind ours. The car placed its full beams on. I let out a gasp and I looked at my dad. He'd gone into work mode. He had completely shut me out. He accelerated down the street, and as we came to the main road, I saw there were many cars still on the main road. He pulled straight out onto the main road, meaning the car coming on the main road needed to brake sharply and held down their horn at us. I kept my eyes on the road ahead of us, breathing deeply as my dad weaved in and out of the lanes. A part of me was completely terrified, and a part of me was still convinced that this wasn't really happening, that he had exaggerated or mistaken this. He wasn't really following us. I dared to look in the side view mirror and saw it was a different car behind us. I felt myself relax a little. We turned left at the coming roundabout, giving very little room to anyone, and a few moments of holding my breath, thinking we were going to hear the sound of metal on metal. The street we had turned onto was slightly quieter than the road previous. I slowly glanced into the side mirror, and it was a different car behind us. I sighed relief and thought that it had been really my dad's imagination. Suddenly, the rearview mirror became a little bit more illuminated again, and I awkwardly turned in my seat to see a car pull out sharply from behind the car behind us and pull quickly into behind our cars again. I looked at my dad again. He grabbed his phone from his pocket and told me to call someone in particular in his phone and put it on speaker. My hands were shaking. I could barely press the buttons. A cheerful voice answered before he could say anything else, and my dad quickly summarised what's happened. There was a pause, and I could hear the voices speaking in the background, radios beeping and answering through radios. My dad barked at me to keep naming the streets we were on to the guy on the phone, as my dad randomly turned down the streets, trying to keep to the main roads. I'm randomly calling names and trying to remember to see the direction we was heading in. The car was so close behind us and completely blinding any view behind us. All I could think was please don't hit us. If we crash, we can't run. What the hell can I do? My leg had only just been blasted. I knew I stood no chance. I suddenly wondered if they were getting close enough to take a shot at us. This, for me, was unthinkable. It was England. This isn't the norm. Why the hell would someone shoot us? We continued to weave down streets and random turns as I tossed around in the front seat, clutching onto the mobile in my trembling hands. The voice on the phone shouted, "Turn into the Tesco car park that's coming up on the left. We have 3 response vehicles coming from the other direction." My dad sharply turned into the car park, skipping the red light. I shut my eyes, again, waiting for the sound of metal on metal. As we swung into the empty car park near, the car behind us was in close pursuit. Blue lights surrounded our car from what felt like all directions. The sound of sirens was deafening. My dad got straight out of the car and ran behind the car. I screamed, thinking someone could have a gun, and tried to look over my shoulder to see, when my door swung open and a police officer was crouching into the car to help me get out. My arms were complete jelly, and I couldn't even use the crutches to help me stand. Another police officer came between them and helped me as I hopped to the back of the police car. They were kind and tried to distract me as I was trying to see what was going on and where my dad was. I couldn't really see from my ankle, and I also couldn't turn properly due to my leg. They did their best to reassure me, and one had clearly just been through the nearby McDonald's drive-thru and offered me his tea. I just sobbed, begging them to tell me what was going on. My dad, after some time, came over to the car and told them to take me home. He had checked, and my mum was back home with my brother. As the police car turned around in the car park, back towards the entrance, we could see the police surrounding the vehicle, and three men, who looked to be in their late 20s, were handcuffed, leaning over the car, whilst a sniffer dog and two police officers were taking things out of the car, one of which was a baseball bat. When my dad got home late that night, I asked him what that was all about. Who the hell were those men, and why were they following us? He was very reluctant to tell me anything. He did admit it was because of him that they were following us. He explained that he was in a drugs team that dealt with, how I understand this as an adult, the interception of large shipments of drugs that were being transferred across the country, and sometimes, people lost a lot of money when they were caught. I just stared at him. I had no idea what to say. He just shrugged and said, "Sometimes people get upset about that." I was on a date in Camden with a girl who, from photos, I wasn't overly excited about, but in the flesh made my eyebrows shoot off my head. She was really pretty and smart and funny. We had quite a few cocktails, and I think it was the Blues Kitchen, before going to the gay bar in Camden, which had since closed down. I think it was called the Black Cap. The day was going well, and we meet these people who join in our table. And the guy tells me at the bar, my date said she wanted me to kiss her. I did, and it turned out the guy was just helping us out by moving things along. My date was really shocked, and told me it was bold, but she liked it. She came back to my hotel room with me, which was like a 10-minute walk away. The room was kind of small, but cool, with a space-age sort of style to it. We were both drunk and made out a lot. She started crying about problems she was having with a friend who was really sick and her job that was really stressful, full on sobbing. She left in embarrassment, even though I wasn't worried about her leaving like that, but she said she'd be okay. As she left, I saw a large man in a black thick leather jacket in the corridor. He was staring at my date as she left, and then stared at me as I closed the door. I was pretty wasted, so after checking my date got on a bus, I had a nap and was woken by banging on the door. I ignored it, but then it just kept going, so I staggered up to the door and opened it a crack. I recognised the leather elbow and arm as the door was shoved open violently. I was drunk, and the jolt of the door caused me to fall over. Luckily, the room entrance was small, and around the width of the door, so my back was against the wall by the door, whilst my feet touched the other wall. My body kept the door closed as this man kept shoving against the door. I managed to get it closed again, locked it, and went to sleep as I was still drunk. When I woke up in the morning, I thought I'd dreamt the man at the door. But when I looked up and down the side of my ribs, my hips and my thigh, I had dark bruises. I was really lucky, and I'm so glad that my room was tight on space, because if it hadn't, that guy would have got in so easily.
Emoji moment from Mark, who writes, "I just want to thank you for making GLP-1s affordable. What would have been over $1,000 a month is just $99 a month with Mochi. Money shouldn't be a barrier to healthy weight. 3 months in, and I have smaller jeans and a bigger wallet. You're the best. Thanks, Mark. I'm Myra Ahmed, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Mark is a Mochi member compensated for his story.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.